From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 9th day of September 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. We'll check in on the agricultural news for the afternoon. TTIP and TPP are both in the news. And we'll also take a look at the weather forecast. That with Agribull's Eric Snodgrass as we close out our half hour together. And then be sure to stick around for Commodity Week if you can. Our panelists this week include Wayne Nelson, Chuck Shelby, and Kevin Van Trump. Commodity Week, it's our weekly look at what's been happening in the world of agriculture. Both programs are available anytime you'd like on demand for you to listen to on our website at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the numbers in Chicago from the CME Group on this Friday afternoon. September corn, 3 cents higher at $3.30. December, 3.41, up 2.5. The March up 3 at 3.51.5. September soybeans, 5.25 higher, $9.97.25 the settlement price. November at 9.80 1/4, up 3.5. January at 9.84 1/4, 3.75 cents higher. Wheat futures finished the nearby September down a penny at 3.76. The soft red July at 4.51, a penny and 3/4 lower. And the hard red July at 4.55, up a half of a cent. Live cattle in the October, $3 higher at $104.40. The feeders at 133.70 in the September, up 2.10. October up 2.15 at 130.65. Lean hogs October contract down $1.70 at $59.30. We're joined now by Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. Good Friday afternoon to you, Mike.
Great to be with you, Todd.
Well, let's start off with the day trade for the day. Not a bad way to end the week, especially when we have what is expected to be such a large crop coming on, and we're about ready to get harvest. Some actually beginning a little bit.
No, I think that the yield number in the corn being lower versus last month on an average trade guess and the bean yield being higher, coupled with the sharp drawdown in crude oil stocks, which we got the report of that on Thursday instead of Wednesday because of the holiday, I think those two things really kept the market very strong. And I think today represented very well kind of the way the whole week traded. The wheat fought the market, kicking and screaming, probably because they're worried about the world wheat number on the report Monday. Also because the Egyptian issue with the ergot fungus is still alive and kicking. I wish someone would shoot that in the head and we'd get that out of our talking points. But I think Monday's trade will have quite a bit of look to it in terms of analysts looking at the wheat number, because we had the September soft red wheat get down to 53 cents premium to lead month September corn. And so we're deep in the feed category. Dece is a little bit better at just over 60 cents, but still very much in the feed category. So between that and what USDA may do with demand in the corn, those are probably the two biggest issues that maybe could upset the apple cart to what we developed here technically this week, Todd.
Okay, so which one number, whether it's corn or soybeans, and usage or supply doesn't matter, do you think will change the balance sheet most, if any at all?
I think the beans will matter less if the yield goes up. One, because the trade's already expecting it. Two, I think they have a bias and a sentiment that's probably pretty accurate that the demand can chew into whatever supply increase we have. Probably the biggest factor out there is the world-ending stocks of coarse grains and corn. The FAO came out this week, United Nations FAO came out this week and took ending stocks and stocks to use down to levels not seen since 13-14 marketing year. And that's even taking the U.S. ending stocks in corn from 2 billion to 2.4 billion bushels. That, to me, I think is a big deal. And if the USDA replicates that, and gosh, if they would replicate China's government figures in corn production this year, dropping to 219.5 million tons instead of what they put out in August of 226, those two things, I think, would really change the dynamic of the corn market, and needed to change the dynamic of the corn market, because we are, after all, right in the thick of harvest. Probably the third thing that we have to talk about this week, and probably we'll talk about again next week, is the weather. The wet weather did come in and probably shipped some shorts back into a neutral bias.
Do you think weather, as we look at the outlook, is going to be a problem for the beginning of harvest season?
It sure looks like it on the European model. My primary consultant that I was in touch with this week, a meteorologist, suggested that it's not going to be much different than normal, but the European model is suggesting very heavy rains the next 10 days from essentially I-70 south from pretty much Richmond, Indiana, all the way to Topeka, Kansas. And if that occurs, with some of the talk about the quality, about diplodia, about stock standability in the corn, I think those will end up being issues, and that weather will become a bigger and bigger factor as time goes on. It's a really big basis, potentially basis player here after the report comes out.
We'll know more as crop progress reports come out each and every Monday, but it feels as if this harvest is going to be a little early unless it gets slowed down by the weather.
Yeah, I think you're right. There are some reports out of Indiana and Illinois that the moisture levels are still running in the mid to lower 20s, so it seems to have pulled some back. But yeah, the rain is the big deal and probably the biggest issue after the report comes out as to how fast we can get the corn out, and then therefore how fast we back up elevators, and how much of a big deal the wheat stocks and soft red country and hard red country come in and hurt us in terms of actual cash price off the combine sales.
Ending stocks for the 2015-16 or the old crop soybeans expected to change much given the amount of beans that have been sold in the last month?
And a good question. We actually saw the 15-16 shipments end this week with the export sales this morning, pretty even with USDA, so probably not a lot of change there. Probably the biggest issue is the 15-16 corn shipments. They were down 5% versus USDA wanting to show them, and which should come up about 3% short of USDA, I should say. So the USDA, if they would take the USDA yield for 16-17 down, they could come in with a bigger 15-16 carry-in and massage the numbers so we don't change that much. That along with just the way the USDA has been in September reports of the past couple years, made me want to keep the puts in place in corn just in case we had a slam down into the end of September like 2014. It's really interesting. We're only about 10 cents away from where we were trading at the exact same time in 2007 and in 2014, Todd. And yet those 2 years, we went the exact opposite directions from here on out. 14 went down into the stocks report. 7 went up into the stocks report and actually made a significant high right around the 25th of September 25th of 2007. So this is where I think what the USDA gives us for ending stocks of corn, both domestically and globally, will probably dictate whether we follow 07 or 14. I, for one, would rather have a 14-type move, get the charts into a double bottom, and really, once we make a low, never really look back. 07 was a lot more choppy.
Yeah, so we have grain stocks coming up. Anything that you think will happen there with either the livestock as it's related to feed issues or not?
I think we still keep chewing into the ethanol grind and chewing into the livestock demand because the dressed weights for cattle remain high. The hog numbers remain high. I don't know how USDA could give us a, quote, bearish stocks report for September compared to the last 5 years when we did not have this kind of livestock demand.
All right. Anything else before I let you go for the afternoon?
Yeah, one of the things you and I have talked about a lot is coming to pass, and I think it's important in the outside markets. $51 billion has moved into commodity investments in the first 7 months of this year. That's Barclays data suggesting these asset flows are moving and moving into commodities, away from equities. Federal Reserve rate hike potential, you can see what it kind of is doing to the stock market today. And if that becomes a trend, we may continue to see these asset flows look more favorably on commodities. So it I think is really up to USDA and what they typically do in September. If they lay on us heavily with supply, it's going to take some more time to eke out a bottom, I think. But if they give us a good report, that would put some long-term charts, commodity index charts, in some pretty nice-looking positions.
Hey, Mike, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking time on Fridays.
Thank you for calling, and have a great weekend, sir.
Of course, that's Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. In today's agricultural news, Republicans and Democrats are split over how long into the new fiscal year to extend current funding, either into the lame duck Congress or a newly elected one. The impacts for agriculture are large. There could be office closures, furloughs, slow government payments, and much more if lawmakers don't act, says the American Farm Bureau Federation's R.J. Carney.
There's no well-known answer yet on if it's going to go into a lame duck session or if they'll kick it back into March of next year. So that's sort of a wait-and-see game. Congress typically likes to respond as close to deadlines as possible.
And with crop and dairy prices so low and producers looking for near-term help, Carney said another kick-the-can-down-the-road scenario isn't good for agriculture. He says delaying decisions on EQIP and other conservation programs, ag-research and rural development, biotech outreach, policies dealing with Cuba, and reform of meat marketing rules are other problems.
As that continues, it causes a lot of uncertainty on what any new programs Congress might be able to allocate more money to, where some cuts might come in. And as farmers are trying to make decisions, these are going to have impacts not only on farmers and ranchers, but also rural communities throughout the United States.
Mandatory crop programs like crop insurance, crop payments, and nutrition programs would not be affected by continuing current spending. Let's talk trade deals now. The U.S. Trade Representative Michael Froman and his counterpart from Europe are scheduled to meet next Thursday to discuss the future of the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership negotiations. Those are known as TTIP. The Brussels meeting comes amid growing doubts about whether the U.S. and the EU can finish the mammoth trade negotiations launched more than 3 years ago. In recent weeks, senior German and French officials have questioned the viability of finishing the deal, although the German Chancellor and the French President were not quite as harsh in their assessment. Still, it was notable that U.S. and European leaders attending the Group of 20 meeting in China earlier this week passed up the opportunity to issue a statement urging negotiators to redouble their efforts to bring the long-running talks to a close. Let's move from TTIP to TPP. A group of apparel, footwear, and retail companies and organizations are appealing to U.S. lawmakers to support a vote to implement the TPP with a reminder that an enacted trade deal could lower cost on clothes, shoes, backpacks, and other items kids need as they head back to school this fall. The letter, signed by 118 companies and organizations, also reminds lawmakers that a fully phased-in TPP will remove more than $2.8 billion in duties the U.S. charges on imports of footwear, apparel, and travel goods. And finally today, one other story out of Washington, D.C. The EPA is aiming to issue a decision on Monsanto's new dicamba products designed to be used with Roundup Ready Xtend crops by the end of the year. But the process has been complicated by reports of farmers using an older version of the herbicide, in some cases damaging nearby crops that are not resistant to the weed killer. Michael Goodis, acting director of EPA's Pesticide Registration Division, told the AC21 meeting Thursday that while those uses are illegal and could be subject to criminal penalties, the effects of the chemical on nearby non-dicamba-resistant crops have raised questions about the ability of Monsanto's new formulation of the herbicide to be contained on fields where it is applied. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason, joined now by Eric Snodgrass. He's at Agrible right here in town. Thanks for being with us, Eric. Why don't you take us through the great big picture of agriculture for the weekend and where we are right now.
Some great data was just released over the last week or so that kind of shows the statewide minimum temperature rank. So this is provided by NOAA. They have a 122-year record. And what's amazing is that when you look at states like Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, we had years that were very close to record warmth for overnight low temperatures. And that's important because corn needs those cooler temperatures. Soybeans needs those cooler temperatures at night to really be productive. Ohio had their warmest overnight temperatures during that time period on record. Again, those records go back to the late 1800s. You know, we combine that, though, with a precipitation pattern that's been extremely wet. You know, I was just looking over the last 30 days. So this has been the most important 30 days for soybeans, especially, where we've seen most of Iowa, nearly all of Illinois, Indiana, Minnesota, and several other parts of the Corn Belt, where we're at 200% or more of normal rainfall. Now, when the crop is as healthy and as big as it is, doubling the rainfall, well, the ground can take it. That's why we haven't seen a whole lot of reports of, you know, widespread flooding. But it just shows what we're thinking in terms of, you know, the combination of warm overnight temperatures, but maybe the relief from the rain will help this crop stay big. And so that all kind of boils down to where we are right now. And right now, some folks are trying to harvest that corn south of us here in Illinois. And we've got some unfortunate rains coming through right now that are keeping a lot of guys out of the field. So this is the picture for the weekend. Got a low pressure system that's developing right now to our west. It's going to be moving up and really strengthening over the Great Lakes this weekend. And as it does so, basically for the remainder of today into early tomorrow morning, we're going to see some precipitation moving through a wide section of the Corn Belt, all accompanying this cold front that's coming through. But that cold front's going to be welcomed because we're going to knock temperatures back. We're going to clear things out for the remainder of the weekend. And we're expecting to stay near average, potentially cooler than average, all the way through Tuesday, Wednesday of next week. So I think the heat we saw earlier this week is probably the last hurrah for the really warm summer temperatures. I'm talking those temperatures way up in the low 90s, upper 80s. And a big feature we're watching for the middle of the month is something called a Rex block. So now let's get out of this week and move much further beyond that. It's kind of a cool thing. Like I said, we always watch the jet stream, right? The jet stream kind of tells us the story of the weather. And we're going to have this feature where there's a high pressure system sitting over the top of a low pressure system. When I say over the top, I mean the high pressure system's to the north, the low is to the south. And if that sets up over the west coast of the United States, it keeps us here in the central part of the states in this constant kind of transition zone between warm and cold. But more than likely, we don't see a dry down anytime soon.
And then for La Nina, I know there was a release this week. Can you give me a quick 30 seconds?
Yeah, so this is the big deal. The La Nina we've been forecasting for about 9 months now. Each month we get closer and closer to it. It keeps coming in weaker than average. And as a result, you know, if we have a weak La Nina or potentially even what we would just call inso-neutral conditions, that's where we don't have La Nina or El Nino, what this means is this is less stress on the Brazilian crop. And if there's less stress on that crop and they come in next year at 102, 103 million metric tons of soybeans, that keeps the global grain glut going. So that's something to be watching as we move into their planting season.
Thanks, Eric. Eric Snodgrass, of course, is with Agricable from right here in Urbana, Champaign.